Hello there, welcome to the latest edition of The Front Page. In this week's show, we are looking back at a spectacular edition of Kipco British Champions Day. We'll be looking forward to the new jump season with the help of our new Racing Post, The Big Jump Off, and we'll be focusing on a Racing Post special report on delays to punter withdrawals. All that, and maybe more, with myself. My name is Lee Mottishead. Their names are Jonathan Harding and Maddie Playle. Hello to you both. Maddie, we'll start with you, because I've not seen you for a while. You've been somewhere exotic.
It wasn't particularly exotic when there was a big thunderstorm and plenty of rain. But yeah, been away in Italy for a week, switched off, which is quite difficult to do if you're me and you're racing brained, as anyone in the sport would know. But yeah, had a thoroughly lovely time and back refreshed, ready for the jumps. I think it's about time now, isn't it? But yeah, when one season comes to the close, you get in the mode for the other. And yeah, really excited with the big jump off, which I help contribute to. We're going to talk a little bit about that in a bit.
Yes, it is a beautiful thing indeed. Jonathan Harding, you were with me at Ascot on Saturday.
I was.
Long way from Italy. But the weather was, it got
no
good.
No thunderstorms.
It was pretty grim when we got there, but it got better. No. Do you have a nice time?
I had a lovely time.
Did you?
Yeah, I left feeling all warm and fuzzy. It was a very good day. Good racing, lots of people there, and I'm sure we'll get onto that. But I think it was a success, really.
I think it was a success too. Well, we hope you were left feeling warm and fuzzy by Kipco British Champions Day. More of which now from Mr. Harding.
Yeah, so just generally, I think it was very successful. I think as a concept, Champions Day perhaps took a little bit of time to bed in, but it's firmly established now, I would suggest, between Art Weekend and Breeders' Cup. People have it on their agenda, as Nick Smith told me yesterday, and that showed with the quality of the races. They're balloting horses out of Group 1s, which shows how popular those races are. Good prize money. We had some fantastic performances. And Matt coming from a seemingly impossible position to win the Champion Stakes. We had Charin, the top miler, Kind of Blue keeping it in the family in the sprint, and then Calpana looks every bit an art course potentially for next year. So fantastic performances. Haven't even mentioned Kyprios, sorry. Best stare in the world.
Yeah.
Small matter of that. So yeah, fantastic. And we'll start wherever you'd like.
Okay, Maddie, why don't we start with, well, the Champion Stakes. Watching that race, hard to believe, even when you look to the replay, that Anmark could win from where he did. Jim Crowley, I remember getting to him around the winner's enclosure before we went to get his prize. He'd just been interviewed by, well, he's about to be interviewed by Mike Catamore for Ascot TV. And I just looked at him and smiled, and he said, "Best horse won." And he meant it. You know, he was adding what he said afterwards, that this is a horse who, apart from that one disappointment in Longchamp last time, he had been very, very good horse. He thought it was last year's Clips if he hadn't got injured. And he really believes that the best horse won that race. Do you believe that too?
I think so, yes, because he's had to overcome so much. It was the most fascinating race to watch on the day, wasn't it? Because you had two halves of it, really. In the straight, the first half of the horses went backwards and the horses at the back came forwards, which is what created so much drama. I had my eye on Calandagan, who was so slow away from the stalls. I thought there's no way he can recover from that. And he somehow got a dream passage. And then before you know it, Anmat's there shoving economics out the way and winning quite cozily in the end, it must be said. He was a Group 1 winner previously in the Prix d'Espahan of last year, but I think the reason he went off such a big price is because he's not really that well known to a lot of punters, given the huge chunks of time he's had off. He had a serious injury to his pedal bone, and a lot of credit obviously must go to Jim Crowley for a daring ride. He got the breaks, admittedly, but also I think what a training performance from Owen Burrows. Yeah. This is a man who has masterminded the careers of several really top class horses now who haven't been straightforward to train.
Hookham,
yeah, he's the one who comes straight to mind. But yeah, I thought it was a fantastic performance and a really interesting race with so many different dynamics to it. Calandagan, again, my eye was drawn to him throughout. I think it's great that he's a gelding, so hopefully we'll see him back next year.
As with Anmart.
But yeah, I don't think I've seen a horse on ground like that come with such a powerful run. It was a strange race, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it was a stunning turn of foot. Jonathan, while we were in the Winners and Closure trying to speak to the winning connections. You were down in that area, reserve horses that don't get in the first four, chasing William Haggis after Economics Run. Not a bad race. He wasn't beaten far at all. He was banging contention a furlong from home, but ultimately a disappointing race because of what we had expected of him.
Yeah, I have a rule that I try not to run in public, okay. But I had to chase after William Haggis as he was being interviewed by ITV, and he just didn't really run his race, did he? It's a shame. He's clearly supremely talented. He's won some very deep races, and he's won very impressively this year. But he was found to have bled. I think possibly it was too much effort for him on that ground, seems to be what connections are saying. The question now is whether we'll get to see him next year. I'd say that's probably a little bit up in the air. He's already won his Group 1. He's clearly has some issues that he needs to work through there. Whether a winter on his back will help that, I don't know, but we'll all be watching that space, I think, on whether we see Economics again. And he didn't run terribly, and given the ground and given the fact that he bled, I think he's actually put in quite a big effort there, but it's a shame because I think we're all expecting really him and Calandigan to serve it up to one another and have a proper, almost a match really on paper. But yeah, it's kind of looking forward. It would be interesting to see whether they decide to keep him in training.
We won't see Charon in training next year. He's going to stud in France. But
we might see him again, though.
We might see him again in Japan.
Yeah, I like the sound of that.
Yeah, that would be a really ambitious training. I still can't quite get my head around the fact that the horse who was Charon last year, who again wasn't a bad horse, but he ran in Group 1s at 33-1, 40-1, 66-1, ended off like getting beaten in the Celebration Mile, started off his season on Lincoln Day at Donny, which is not where champion milers begin their campaign, and yet he's been magnificent this season. He really has improved, and I thought on Saturday, that in some ways, aside from Anmart's incredible turn of foot, the visual memory I have most is seeing Sylvester de Souza sat motionless on him with a furlong to go in front and thinking, my God, this really all of a sudden is a genuinely outstanding miler. And there was that brief moment when you thought Fatchival was actually going to embarrass de Souza. But again, in the end, Charon's just gone right away from him.
Yeah, it's so tough, isn't it? Funny in the prelims, he doesn't look anything special, does he really? He's quite small and he's a bit of a bull of a horse. But I think it's wonderful that we've got this kind of almost old school narrative of a four-year-old just coming back and improving leaps and bounds. You know, it's not something I think we tend to see to that extent these days. You know, horses tend to hold their form and progress, but certainly not to his level. Obviously, it's been a fantastic season for Sylvester de Souza, having his connection with Charon after being booted out of Hong Kong. And Roger Varian once again showing that he's just a top-class trainer. But yeah, for me, the remarkable thing, which you touched on, Lee, is just how long he's been on the go, and he's really held his form. He certainly didn't look like it was, you know, the end of a long season on Saturday. Remarkable horse to travel. You know, he's so versatile. He'll be a real strong addition to the stallion ranks. Can't wait to see what he can produce, because if they're anything like him, they'll be a joy to watch.
Absolutely, and we do see obviously Factor Cheval next season. John, you wrote about the champion sprint. The other two group ones, and the champion sprint Kind of Blue and Kalpana in the fillies and mares. Very different styles of victory. Kalpana was awesome. Kind of Blue continued his improvement. What do you make of those two races?
Yeah, well, James Fanshawe was doing his best Aidan O'Brien impression after the race, sort of thanking everybody associated with the horse, which is kind of his character. But it was great to see him have a Group 1 winner, because he always seems to have one just in time, James Fanshawe, and it tends to be in that race. It was nice that there's that family connection, that he's trained the family, the Tin Man and Deacon Blue. And it was a good performance. There's not a huge amount to split those sprinters, and they always say if you run a sprint race 10 times, you might have 10 different winners, but I thought he was value for it, and he'll be one to follow next year. Kalpana will definitely be one to follow next year. She has a real, almost a bit of blue stocking about, actually, I think, not just because of the colours, I think just the nature of that performance was, dare I say, one of the more impressive. Probably her and Kyprios were the most impressive margins, I think. And yeah, it was a brilliant, brilliant performance from Kalpana. And I think the arc, feels silly to talk about the arc, given we've only just had the last one, but a campaign geared towards that looks incredibly exciting.
Yeah, underlines again the enormous success of Judmont. One of the late Prince Khalid's sons, Prince Ahmed, was at Ascot on Saturday. He was talking about how they celebrated three major top flight wins with fillies and mares recently, because as well as Blue Stocking and Calpana, they'd had a victory in the States at grade one level on Arc Day. She has all of a sudden, well, with that performance, become a genuine candidate for the very best races next season.
Definitely, without a doubt, and showcased her versatility too. A few of us weren't sure that she would absolutely love that sort of ground, but she just went through it. I thought, particularly given what we've said earlier about the Champion Stakes, some of the races, it was hard to really make an attacking move from the back. And she was close enough up, but she was under pressure from, you know, a fair way out, but just was relentless. And that's the sort of quality you need to be involved in an arc. Just on Judmont, I think the way they nurture their bloodlines, I think sets them apart from the likes of Coolmore, and Godolphin, in a way that has really been seen to magnificent effect with their fillies and mares in recent years. You know, you look at the likes of Enable, of Blue Stocking, there's so many, I can't name them all off the top of my head, but the way that they craft their matings and preserve those lines, I think is just magnificent, and we're seeing it bear fruit once again. And look at the juveniles they've had come through this year, you know, spectacular group of young horses, and it's great to see such a legacy sustained.
Yeah, it was a big day actually for Owner Breeze on Saturday. Disappointing day, well, maybe not disappointing, but you look at these big races and they're often losers in amongst the winners. I felt particularly sorry for Daniel Muscat, who'd ridden kind of blue in all his races so far, but with the Wathnam purchase, obviously James Doyle comes in for the ride, and Daniel Blue is looking on from Wolverhampton while James Doyle's winning on Kind of Blue, and that's nobody's fault, it's just that's the way these things work. And PJ McDonald had ridden Calpana to her two previous wins. He's replaced by William Buick on Saturday. There's definitely still that element of the tiers of sort of, not jockey sexiness, but jockeys who tend to get those rides in big races. Ryan Moore gets rides in all the big races. Connection of Kypros was saying after the long distance cup how well he rides that horse.
Yeah.
But after the race, Ryan Moore was basically saying how good that horse is. Again, I was bowled over. Everyone loves Kypros. You can't not admire Kypros. But I just thought, watching him on Saturday, there's a horse that just 2 weeks earlier had gone 2.5 miles in grueling ground at Longchamp, winning a Prix du Cadran. He come out again, looked as fresh as a daisy in winning that long distance cup. John, he really is magnificent.
Yeah, and you do get these stayers who are just gritty and resolute, but he's got that bit of class as well, and I think that's what sets them apart. And in Sweet William and Trawler Man are two pretty good yardsticks as well. He's beaten good opposition there and done it comfortably. He's one of those horses that you go into the day, you sort of chart what your stories might be and who the likely winners mm-hmm. might be and how you might write the report ultimately. And with Kypros, you just kind of assume that he's either going to win or he's going to be second.
Yeah, he's great, isn't he?
I just don't think we've perhaps given him the credit he deserves. I mean,
yeah,
it's
right.
Outstanding season to be on the go for as long as he has been. Was it his eighth win on Saturday? Seventh or eighth win, and obviously now he's Ballydore's most successful horse in Group 1 contests. He's a proper racehorse, isn't he? He now knows how to race. There's none of the shenanigans that we saw in the Cadran few years ago where he veered across the track or he idles, and I think, like you said, Ryan Moore's tapped into that now. He knows how to ride him and optimise him in these staying contests against horses that just aren't in the same league. I think he's just beautiful to watch, and like you say, he was fresh and well, and if we can see him put together another season, anything like this season next year, he's going to have to be among the greats. And he's still not particularly old either.
No.
Coming back from a life, almost life-ending injury too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Remarkable.
Yeah. Two other bits to touch on before we move on. John, we saw Ashim Murphy crowned champion jockey on Saturday. We saw Aidan O'Brien crowned champion trainer. He won't actually officially be champion trainer for to the end of the year, but he's so far in front that no one's going to catch him. Godolphin champion owners. In some ways, Ashim Murphy winning the champion jockey crown. It's not gone unreported what he's been doing this year, but he's been having a huge lead for a long period of time. He probably won this 2 months ago, realistically. But he was saying during the week that maybe come next year he might have a change of emphasis on what his priorities are in 2025.
Yeah, I think it was almost a non-story, him being crowned champion, because in everybody's heads he's sort of been champion jockey, as you say, for months now, because he has been so relentless and has built up such a lead that he was never going to be caught. And as for the approach, I think that is just a logical progression with these top jockeys. He's won it 4 times now. I'm sure he'd love to win it for a 5th time, but at the same time I'm sure he'd love to win a few more of those big group ones, you know, because a jockey of his caliber, you'd expect that. I think that's the level that he rides at, is up there with a Ryan Moore and those sorts of jockeys. So I think, yeah, that's the logical next step for him, whether it's a halfway house that he still has a decent crack at it while also being a little bit more focused on those big races internationally, I'm not sure. But yeah, I just think he's been a fantastic ambassador this year, especially, particularly at Ascot, with all the various things that were going on before racing. You saw him signing autographs and doing a jockey masterclass. He's almost embracing that role of champion jockey perhaps a bit more than he has previously, so that was good to see as well. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he kind of focuses next year.
Yeah, and Maddie, Aidan O'Brien goes out saying he's a genius and outstanding trainer. But he hadn't actually, he's not won the British title every year, because it's a hard thing to do from outside of Britain, just as Willie Mullins showed last year when he won the jumps title. We'll talk about that in a second. But the fact he won it again this season, Aidan O'Brien, underlines what an incredible campaign he's had too.
Yeah, and there's been a sort of train of thought that his older horses haven't been quite as spectacular for the last couple of years, hasn't there? Obviously, he had the likes of August Rodin and Luxembourg this year, so he's had some big hitters, but he's just an astounding trainer. And when you get the raw materials that he has, you know, it's very easy to see why he's so dominant. And another bumper crop of two-year-olds after City of Troy, you know, this time last year. Can't wait to see him at the Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, his two-year-old fillies this season have been incredible. And finally, John, you were speaking to Nick Smith yesterday of Ascot about the crowd on Saturday. It was just under 30,000, wasn't it? It felt a busy day at Ascot. They were happy with the number?
Very happy, yeah. In the context of Champions Day crowds, it was massively up on 2022, which I think was around 24,000 without looking, and this was 29. Slightly down on last year when there was an element of the Frankie factor, his final meeting in Britain. And of that crowd figure, there was about 6,000 people through the Kipco Club and through Invades, quote-unquote young people present, which is hugely encouraging as well. So
you say that like you're not a young person.
I don't qualify for the Kipco 26 Club, 18 to 26, 28.
No longer a young.
I'm the bracket above, unfortunately.
I won't qualify for the 38-46 Club. So you're in a better position than I am.
Yeah, sorry. But yeah, I just think having that many young people in, as Nick Smith put it, is kind of viewed as a bit of an open day for the sport. That's what they want that to be. Yep. I think it's firmly established in the calendar now. But at the same time, at the very heart of it has to be, you can have all the pageantry and all the extra things that they put on with jockey masterclasses and face painting or whatever, you know, that type of thing. But you still have to have high quality racing, and they're also delivering there.
Yeah, I agree. And before we finish this bit, just say farewell and well done to Rod Street, who's been the mastermind of British Champion Day, Kipco's British Champion Day, since its birth, and bowed out on Saturday. He's one of the most enthusiastic people you could meet in racing, and he can go out there with his head held high. As can all the people who produced this, the big jump off, our jumps preview supplement, which is available in today's edition of the Racing Post. That's Monday we're talking now, so Monday edition of the Racing Post. You can get that for free with the Racing Post, and if you come to it later, be viewing this on maybe on Tuesday or thereafter, and you still want to get a copy of it, you certainly can just go to the Racing Post shop. And is with linking to the big jump off, we move to our next story, Maddie. We're moving on from starting stalls to starting tapes.
We are jump season. Can't wait. as I said earlier, I help contribute to the big jump off, and without sounding too sort of self-indulgent, I do think it's one of the best things we do. If you're a jump racing fan, there's just so much good stuff in there from the likes of this morning I was just flicking through James Willoughby, Mark Holder, just really fascinating, compelling stuff to really refresh you and get you prepared for the jump season, as well as loads of good stuff from, you know, Tom Siegel, Paul Keeley, champion trainer Paul Nichols, Aidan Coleman's given some good insight. We've got an exclusive interview with Harry Cobden, so yeah, a must read. And some interesting sort of jump thoughts coming out of last week, particularly with Willie Mullins. We'll remember that epic British Trainers Championship battle out with Paul Nichols and Dan Skelton last year. So interestingly, given he's already had 8 runners in Britain this season, that he's going to really try and target meetings in Britain earlier this campaign, particularly at Cheltenham pre-festival. He's got 3 entries on Friday. The entries for Saturday will be coming out as we speak. And he's going to be more proactive, and as well at Aintree. He said he sent so many horses to Aintree last year and had a particularly good experience, that he's now going to be zoning in on that meeting with a keener eye. So that's sure to send a shiver down the spine of plenty of British trainers hoping that they can skip Aintree and get one over on Willie Mullins, because I don't think that's quite going to happen. Mullins also came out with some really fascinating observations about the Grand National, saying that last year's winner, I Am Maximus, is really properly going to be geared towards winning the race for a second time, as opposed to going for the Gold Cup, because his owner JP McManus really thinks now that this is the horse who can deliver back-to-back Grand Nationals. And Willie saying that he thinks more of the classier type horses are going to be given their chance in the race now, given the changes that we've seen in the last couple of years, particularly last year. Which he sort of said it's a shame for the Grand National, because it used to be a race that anyone could win, but he's seeing the bigger picture, like I think many of us in racing do, that, you know, we need to preserve the race and make it a more sanitary spectacle, perhaps is the word these days, and one that the greater public can more confidently get behind. But yeah, for me, and we've touched upon this a little bit with the analysis and the big jump off, one of the real angles of this jump season is going to be that Trainers' Championship. You know, we've already had developments to it. I wrote a column in The Weekend a couple of weeks ago about Dan Skelton and how he'd sent out so many runners at Chepstow. He had 8 entered in the Silver Trophy at one point. He was really attacking that meeting, whereas you've got Paul Nichols, who, okay, Rubo was very, very good yesterday at Kempton, but his string are going to take a little bit more time to come to the boil, and he's seemingly fine with that. And then you've got Willie Mullins, who's saying, Cheltenham, I'm coming for you, way, way before March. So who's going to end up on top when you've got, you know, a trainer who is so, so dominant in Ireland?
Yeah.
And he's going to cherry pick his runners to send over to Britain, and he's really going to, I think now he's probably figured out that it's attainable. He might try and get it won before, or mostly won before, the riches of the Grand National come into play,
because that was, rely on that,
no, that was pinnacle to last year's success. And Dan Skelton, I mean, he's just such an ambitious, competitive trainer, much like his former boss, Mr. Nichols. So you can see that there's fire in his belly to really go to war with. My horse to follow came from Dan Skelton's yard. And
that horse was?
Gwenny May Boy.
Tell me about Gwenny May Boy.
I can do, but I can also say my initial horse to follow came from Dan Skelton's yard too, before it was stolen by another Racing Post colleague.
So
that was Let It Rain, the mare who beat Brecon Castle and Celtic Dino in an Ascot bumper, was earmarked for the champion bumper before sustaining a minor injury. But she's a beautiful, huge daughter of Caiff Tara. Exactly my kind of horse. I think she could be a real good thing for the mares, not just hurdle. But anyway, Gwenny May Boy, I think you can get odds of about 50-1 for the stayers. Obviously, it was a lowly mark off he won at Aintree at the end of last season. He wasn't first pick. Wes Balboa was in that race for the Skeltons, and Dan said afterwards, I expected her to win. But the improvement from Gwenny May Boy since switching to his yard was just extraordinary. I think we could be seeing another sort of Paisley Park Flooring Porter style improver, where they just keep going on that upward trajectory. I thought it was so powerful in the finish at Aintree. I think you could have put another £10 on his back and he still would have won. He has got a much higher mark to contend with now. Handicap hurdles for the first stages of the season, but I wouldn't be surprised if he made the step up, because we know that step isn't necessarily a huge one between handicaps and graded races over 3 miles. It doesn't seem to be a standout as good as Tihupu is. So yeah, I can't wait to see Gwenny May Boy in handicaps, because we know Dan Skelton loves a big handicap winner. Yeah, I'm just very excited for the jumps now.
I'm sensing your excitement. Jonathan, has got Cheltenham Friday, Saturday. Ascot again the following Saturday, with Weatherby and Daryl. They're all coming along now. You're at Ascot for that first jumps meeting there. Is your blood pumping as much as Maddie's for it?
Yeah, absolutely. Love this time of year. Yep. Definitely, I'd agree. The Trainers' Championship for me is going to be fascinating. I love the idea of people sort of writing Paul Nicholls off after a slow start. I think you have to be fairly brave to ever write him off anything. It's a sign of where he's...
For the record, I'm not, Paul, if you're listening, I'm not writing you off. I'll get a phone call after this saying...
It says a lot about where he's... the level he's reached in the game, that he looks on last year as being average when he sent out as many winners as he did and won as much prize money as he did. And Dan Skelton's just like another version of Paul in that sense, with the massively ambitious, up for the fight. I think with Mullins has shaken it up a little bit, which is nice, because those sort of championship races and storylines aren't for everybody, and people think they're a bit of a distraction and a sideshow, but I actually think they're really interesting, or they can be, when you have these sort of extra elements added. So yeah, that for me is one of the big stories of the season, and I'm looking forward to this run now of big races every Saturday, and presumably we'll get Cheltenham quotes starting pretty soon for any horse that wins, which I find a little bit tedious, but yeah, lots to look forward to.
If you're reading those quotes in the Racing Post, there's nothing tedious about them whatsoever. this great, isn't it? This time of year, every Saturday, like you say, John, there's always something to look forward to. Maddie's given us her horse to follow for the year. Now, you don't have to necessarily go with one that you've given already, but is there any horse that you're particularly looking forward to seeing?
My horse to follow was Give Me Five, who ran a massive race behind Khalif de Berlay, was it, at Kempton. I think Harry Durham's going to be a big trainer to follow this year. He's got an unbelievable strike rate, upwardly mobile. He might just be a third version of Nicholas Skelton, and hugely ambitious. And I think Gimme Five's got a great story with his ownership with Brooks Koepka involved. So I think he'll be one to follow this year. As for other horses, all the obvious ones.
Yeah.
You kind of look at the flat season, and we had City of Troy, Economics, a few others. But with the jumps, every division has a big name to follow. And Galopin de Champs is an obvious one for me. I just love the Gold Cup, full stop. I love a proper Gold Cup horse, and he absolutely fits the bill.
And Maddie, you've referenced Dan Skelton's great start to the season a few times. Will he be champion trained this season, do you think?
I think he could, because, and I'm going to go back to what Jonathan was saying about Paul Nicholls. I think Paul probably, by his own admission for the last couple of years, hasn't had the strength in depth of previous years, which makes what he's achieved even more remarkable. Yeah. We know that he's so good at campaigning his horses to maximise prize money. But I think looking through the sort of, let's say, 135 to 160 horses that Dan has, there's a lot of depth there and some really young, progressive horses coming through. I'm sure, in fact, I know, because I spoke to Jay Tidball, who had his first ride for Paul Nicholls at Chepstow's Jumps Opener, and he said there's so many young horses, exciting prospects coming through at Ditchet too, which can't wait to see. But Dan has set out with a statement of intent, hasn't he? And I think he'd be my favourite at this stage.
Okay. John, champion jockey, Harry Cobden, think he can defend his title given his time on the sidelines, Sean Bowen's galloping along?
Yeah, I think that's a slightly harder one to call, I think. Harry Cobden has plenty of quality and quantity.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's done numerically. I think Sean Bowen, perhaps a little bit unlucky last year with that time on the sidelines. I think it would have been even closer had he not had that. I think it would be one of those two. You'd like to see Sean Bowen get it at some point in his career. I think he's certainly justified in getting it, but Cobden's not going to be easy to overcome.
And one final question, because for me this is the most exciting question going into this season: will Constitution Hill come back and regain his champion hurdle crown? Because if you fancy him at the minute, he's actually a backable price.
Not for me. Oh. I'm a bit concerned. Oh. I would love to see him back. Of course I would. One of the most exceptional talents we've seen, but I would be a layer rather than the backer at the minute, purely because of the way that his career has been charted. And it makes me nervous that they've given him a wind-up.
Okay.
Because you don't give a horse who hasn't shown anything wrong a wind-up. So what have they seen at home? You know, if a horse doesn't need one, you don't give it one. So what have they seen at home that makes them think this is going to improve him? Can you improve on what he showed at his peak? So that suggests that maybe there's been a downturn somewhere along the line. It all started with that Kempton gallop, didn't it, before the champion hurdle, which was just absolutely huge. But yeah, I'm slightly nervous. Maybe it's because I'm a bit of a suspicious type and
you don't want to I'm be a bit of a cynic. Journalism or cynical.
Well, you know, you would know that,
no,
Lee.
No,
I think if anyone can get him back to his best, then it's Nicky Henderson.
Yeah.
And, you know, we know the campaign he's going to have. He's probably not going to face, especially now with the retirement of good old Not So Sleepy, he's probably not going to face too many. Rubo's going to go chasing, I think, after the elite hurdle, so he's another one.
Unless Willie Mullins, with his squad of hurdlers, decides that maybe I will just chuck one in and see what happens.
Yeah, that would be wonderful, wouldn't it? Send a few over to the Fighting Fifth, perhaps. But I hate to put a dampener on it, but yeah, I'm slightly concerned that all is not quite 100%, because we've got to remember it's a very, very serious set of circumstances that have been up against Constitution Hill in the last couple of, the last season, really.
Yeah.
So I think he is going to need to be as better than ever to come back from that. I think that's a big ask. But look at Nicky's done it before, hasn't he?
With
like
a
sprint to
Sacre,
fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
But I will upset the apple cart a little bit and say, no, I'll be against him at this stage.
You're more positive, aren't you?
I'm famously optimistic and upbeat. So I would say the best version of Constitution Hill wins the lot, as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. Mm.
I think if he can get to somewhere within that level, he will also win the lot. I don't think he needs to necessarily improve again. I think we kind of know where his potential rivals are, unless there's a horse lurking that we haven't seen, which I think is possible. One stepping into that division that could sort of upset the established order.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a cop-out, but I'd need to see him run before making any firm judgments. It's impossible to know really what's going on at home, bar what we're being told about the horse. He clearly has to overcome some problems, and it'll be a fantastic training performance. I think he can do it. I think he'll win again at the highest level. It's just whether he's then right at his peak at Cheltenham and is good enough to win at Cheltenham is almost another level above what he'll face in theory in a race like the Fighting Fifth. I hope for the sake of racing that he is able to come back and be somewhere near his best, because he's a poster boy, really, and you need those.
I think State Man is so reliable.
Yeah.
You know, you could put your house on him. That's the interesting thing for me, is that if Constitution Hill isn't quite at his best, touch wood, you've got a horse in State Man who is really well placed to exploit that.
He's good, State Man, but I should say he's not on the box of a jigsaw puzzle. Or any jigsaw puzzle. Yesterday, we had in-laws for lunch yesterday, and we owed the father-in-law a belated birthday present. So I bought him an Injured Jockeys Fund Constitution Hill jigsaw puzzle, 1,000 pieces.
Available in all good retailers.
Well, available through the Injured Jockeys Fund. And as we're approaching Christmas, we're there big time. If you like jigsaw puzzles, and the father-in-law does, Constitution Hill jigsaw puzzle looks really
I reckon
good.
You could get your hands on a State Man jigsaw puzzle.
Okay.
There's got to be someone out there doing that, haven't they?
Okay. Well, if it's you, let us know. And don't forget, Racing Post, big jump off in today's Racing Post and available through the Racing Post shop. One more plug now. You like to use WhatsApp, don't you? And if you do, Racing Post Insider is for you. Welcome back, and one more story to look at now. Slightly different beat on this occasion. We had a special report in the Racing Post last week, penned by myself. It was on a subject that will be of interest to many viewers watching this because they will have been impacted by it. That is the subject of punters facing delays when trying to make withdrawals from their bookmaker accounts. Lots of you seemingly have had issues with this. The Gambling Commission reports that in 2023 it was the single biggest area of complaint to the regulator, with around 2,000 complaints on the subject. For the special report, we spoke to a number of punters who've been experiencing issues, including one individual who placed £1,750 of two bets on a golf tournament earlier this year in two betting shops run by one of the leading chains. The golfer he backed won. In one of the shops, he was due to get £31,000, in the other £29,000. In the £31,000 shop, he was initially paid £2,000 in cash and told the rest would come by back transfer. It didn't come. In the other shop, they told him they would pay him five sets of £5,000 instalments. They duly came into his account. The following day, they were taken out of his account. He then embarked on a 12-week battle to get his money from a bookmaker who was never really telling him why the money hadn't been paid to him. And it was only after the punter employed a solicitor who issued a statutory demand on the bookmaker that he was eventually paid out. There are more examples of that sort of story in the special report. We spoke to one senior regulatory figure within one of the major bookmakers who said that from their perspective, the issue of withdrawals relates to the relationship the bookmakers have with the Gambling Commission, which he made clear was far from satisfactory. He said from their perspective, they're made to feel by the Gambling Commission that they should treat everybody as either a potential addict or a potential criminal. On the criminal side of it, that's important because the law states that where bookmakers feel that someone, a customer, might be engaged in some form of money laundering or financial crime, they're not allowed to tell the customer if a delay is being introduced for that reason. The Gambling Commission, on the other hand, while accepting that legal requirement is there, so that in all other cases, bookmakers should not be asking punters for more information at the point of withdrawal compared to the point of deposit. And the Gambling Commission is also promising to keep looking at this and perhaps introduce new rules to help punters in the future. And a number of punters, although admitting that there is an issue with third-party accounts whereby one successful punter will in effect employ other people to have accounts in their name but in effect managed by the punter, while that is an issue, a lot of punters feel that this really stems from bookmakers using regulatory clauses as a way of delaying payments and getting rid of successful punters. That in a nutshell is what was in the special report. It's quite a long nutshell, to be fair. John, it's clearly an issue that is troubling a lot of people, and while there might be reasons why bookmakers delay paying punters their money, it does appear from what the Gambling Commission is saying, as well as what punters are saying, that there are too many instances of bookmakers maybe using the rules as a way of not paying out as promptly as they should.
Yeah, and I'll start with, it's probably a slightly unpopular position and not something I'll say often, but I do have some sympathy with the bookmakers in the sense that they are offering in such a strict regulatory environment at the moment that there are certain things they just have to do, and those will unfortunately generate friction. The flip side of that is the current system seems to be so inconsistent across different bookmakers. I think that's linked to the regulatory environment, but also there is a lot that could be done to make it more consistent across different operators. I understand the view that you would like to have your at the point of customer acquisition, you'd like that to be as frictionless as possible.
Which some bookmakers still do. We spoke to one of the smaller firms that does that.
But at the same time, logically to me, it would make sense to be upfront, transparent, get all the information that is required at the point of either signing up for account or depositing money, rather than at the point of withdrawal.
Yeah.
Because at the point of withdrawal, you're creating doubt and you're creating suspicion and you're creating the sense of, well, we entered into this agreement, I've won, now suddenly I have to provide all of this information and there's doubts about and delays about the withdrawal of the money. That's where the problem comes. And then comes the suspicion of, well, I've won money and they're making it very difficult for me to get it. Perhaps that's something that they just have to do linked to anti-money laundering or what have you. But because it is such an opaque process, in comes the doubt of, am I being shut down because I have a profitable account or because I've won? And they're just sort of a snowballed from there to a point where punters feel as though if they're losing, it's fine and everything's frictionless and everything's easy. If they're winning, suddenly they have to jump through several hoops.
Yeah.
And as far as customer experience goes, you think the bookmakers would be trying to avoid that at all costs. But the argument would be that they're more interested in the acquisition than those accounts that are actually winning money. I would suggest that's what we're hearing anecdotally. I can see both sides is a very sit-on-the-fence answer to this, but I do think that a little sprinkling of transparency and a hell of a lot more consistency from a regulatory point of view would lead to both sides perhaps benefiting.
And I think, Maddie, transparency, the point there John makes, is key in a lot of these cases, because we've spoken to punters on this subject and on the subject of restrictions, which I've covered in my column today,
mm-hmm.
whereby they say they're not able to get a bet on, or they're told they can have a bet of 24 pence on a horse, and they're just told it's a trading decision. There's never any more than that. And in instances where they've been trying to get withdrawal, so many of these stories that we've heard, the bookmaker has never really said to them why they're not getting the money. There is that, I say, that requirement, legal requirement, whereby the bookmaker believes a customer is involved in financial crime, they can't tell the customer why that is the case. But so the Gambling Commission seems to imply that it believes bookmakers are using that excessively as a way really of just not engaging customers with customers in the way they should. More transparency is needed.
Definitely. I think that, as Jonathan's touched upon, builds frustration and you know, doesn't feed a healthy relationship between punters and the bookmakers, and it's almost as if all punters are treated as problematic or as if they need to be looked into initially, you know, without you know, with the realization, I guess, that many punters are, you know, bet responsibly, and I think I can understand this wave of dissatisfaction because of the way that you're treated when you're a punter, you know, whether it be regards to restrictions or you know, how quickly you're paid out or how you're treated in general. I think transparency is one of the main things that will help with that. And like Jonathan says, not only when you don't have transparency, so you don't know why you're being treated the way you are, there's this mounting frustration. But also when it's inconsistent across different firms and you're having different experiences, that just builds it even more because it creates a muddier picture of the industry as a whole. You know, I feel for people who are waiting a long time to get paid out and who are subject to this sort of treatment, even if, you know, at times it is warranted for legal reasons or you know, for very understandable, relevant reasons, as we've touched upon earlier. But I think just the sheer quantity of complaints that we hear at the Racing Post about the way that bookmakers treat punters is something that can't really be ignored at this stage.
Yeah. Just before we end the programme, just reference maybe two things that we talked about last week. We discussed the potential disqualification of Alphonse Legrand from the Cesarewitch because of a whip offence by his jockey Jamie Powell. That disqualification did happen on Tuesday. Connections are planning to or have lodged an appeal against that disqualification, and we've spoken many occasions on this programme about the Gambling Regulation Bill going through Ireland's Parliament. That has now come into effect in the sense that the law has been passed. We don't know when it will manifest itself, suggesting that maybe 2026 will be when the laws are actually in place. But a reminder again this week or last week from Martin Stevenson, Chief Executive of Racecourse Media Group, that Racing TV, the channel which has the rights to Irish racing, does not have the financial capability or the technical capability to create a specific Irish channel, and therefore reminding the government that what RNG, what Racing TV has been saying, has not been an empty threat. And just quickly, guys, really serious situation. It still seems unthinkable that you could have Irish racing broadcast into British homes, but not Irish homes. Surely can't happen.
It's maddening, isn't it? And as you say, Lee, this is a story that we've talked about for quite a while on the front page. The impact this could have is just unthinkable, really, if you're getting to the point where you can't broadcast Irish racing to an Irish audience. It would be hugely detrimental for the industry. You can't really quantify what that would mean. So now this bill has been passed, it's just an incredibly worrying time. How it's going to manifest and how it's going to be reflected in the viewing experience, we just have to wait and see.
Yeah, we do. Sky Sports Racing has said that it will create a special Irish channel, but of course Sky Sports Racing no longer has the rights to Irish racing. So a lot of politics going on in this as well. We will see how that all plays out. This show now has already all but played out. All I have to do is to determine a winner, and on the basis that we're all excited about the coming jump season, what it might have to offer, and the big jump off, I'm going to say, Maddie, your story is the winning story.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Come back
much.
From holiday and you're winner already.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Magnificent. Thank you to Maddie. Thank you to John. Thank you to you for watching. I'm away for a few weeks. Tom Kerr will be in this chair next week. Please do join him then, and for all future episodes. Until then, goodbye.